Fevzi Turkalp, who's here now. He is the Gadget Detective. You can follow him on Twitter, at Gadget Detective. As usual, he's got his Gadget of the Week and also the Techie News of the Week. So, hi, Fevzi.
Hello. Can I just say I love that you play The Clash on BBC Radio Berkshire. I think.
Do you?
Yes.
Good.
I do. Makes me feel like a boy again.
I think this is very much what music is about, isn't it, often? Yes.
True.
Starting as usual with the tech news story of the week, and a jolly serious one as well. Apple facing criticism. Tell us why.
So Apple has announced some of the new features that are going to be in the new version of their operating system, iOS for iPhone and iPadOS for iPads. And this is version 15. It will be out around this autumn. And they've announced that they're launching a crackdown against the circulation of child sex abuse images. And the way that they're doing it, though, is somewhat controversial. What they're intending to do is create a database of known child sexual abuse image photographs. And what they do is they run an algorithm over each picture and create a number which is unique to that picture. So in other words, when you scan a picture, if it matches that number, then you know you've got a hit and that the algorithm has detected a known image on someone's device. Mm-hmm. So the way they're going to do it is they're going to download this database of numbers, this hash numbers as they call it, and if you've got iCloud switched on your phone, they will scan the pictures on your phone, and if any of them match known images, then they will report you to the authorities and close your account. Now, you know, on the one hand, obviously, no one is in favour of these images, and you know what can reasonably be done to detect them should be. It's worth saying that this system will not detect newly created images, just images that are already known to be in circulation. The problem is, what they're doing is effectively a warrantless search of people's devices, because there's no suspicion, there's no probable cause, as the Americans would deem it, to say that this person is under suspicion and therefore we get a warrant and we search their device. What they're doing, or what they're proposing to do, is search everybody's device, albeit for, you know, very bad things, but that's what search is usually looking for, be it, you know, drugs or weapons or pornography of this sort. And the concern is that, of course, it would only take a tweak to the database to download a different database of images for governments to lean on Apple, as governments do. I mean, China regularly leans on Apple and other Western tech companies that want to operate in that large and lucrative market. Perhaps they would put a database of photos of known dissidents and run face recognition on them. I mean, it's the sort of thing that's a really good idea until you think about what would happen if a despotic government were to have influence. And you think about, you know, I mean, think about what Hitler would do with that technology, for example, what he could have done with it. And therein lies the problem, because they're not doing it on the images that have already been uploaded to the iCloud. They're actually running this on your phone. They're taking up your memory space, they're taking up your processing power, and they're doing a warrantless search. And it's quite interesting that Facebook, that has no great credentials in terms of privacy, has taken the opportunity to come out and beat Apple with the privacy stick all over its head, which is kind of the words pot, kettle and black come to mind. But it's an interesting one. But I think the thing is, now that Apple have said they're doing this, if they go ahead, we've already had British and other politicians in America and globally come out and say what a good thing this is, because there's always this tension between the state, who wants access to everything. They want Apple to weaken its encryption so they can get in, but then you weaken the encryption, you weaken it for everybody, you know, including the bad guys. It's like saying, I want you to put a weaker lock on your car or on your front door. Mm-hmm. It's not a great thing. So I'm actually quite concerned about this. I think that there are arguably better ways to have done this. But it looks like they're going ahead with it, unless, of course, the backlash is so large that they modify their plans.
Yeah, it is so difficult, isn't it? Because, as you say, the last thing we want is people to be able to use these images and so forth. If we're saying that this detects only existing images, not newly created ones, could it horribly backfire then and increase the number of newly created images, do you think?
I don't think necessarily the case, because these images by their nature are hard to create, right? That's why they're valuable and why they're shared amongst that community of perverts. But I just worry. I mean, I think that sometimes...
It's more than the misuse of the technology rather
yeah,
than
and,
that.
And yes. I think that because we don't see it, it's because it's virtual, we kind of don't respond to it in the same way as we would if it was physical. If someone said that you can be stopped in the street, or rather that you will be required to hand over your smartphone to be searched for images of someone from Apple and or the state, because of course Apple would have to share its knowledge with the state. If we said that they were allowed to take your phone off you from your hand, look through it to make sure that the images on there are okay, would you think that that was acceptable? None of us are in favour of those sorts of images being promulgated, but would you think that was okay? And if you wouldn't, why would you think that this is all right? Because it's the same thing.
As we have said so many times before in this slot, the wonders of and the speed at which life changes and technology develops just throw up, don't they, these very, very, very difficult decisions that need to be made, and we always seem to be running full pelt, and
we're about a generation behind. This started with other technologies, like reproductive medicine, test tube babies with two parents of one gender, all of these things that science allows us to do, and hopefully for the most part these are great things and great technologies that bring happiness and joy to millions of families around the world. But these technologies throw up ethical conundrums, and science and technology moves quickly. Ethical discussions do not. And therefore we can be decades behind, but we're still trying to work out.
And we can't afford to be. That's the awful thing, isn't it? But we can't help but we can't afford to be either.
Because there has to be a discussion in the country, or in society, what sort of world do we want to live in the future? What sort of world do we want our children to be in the future? And these are difficult questions. And first of all, that people need to understand what the question is, what is at stake. And, at this level of public discourse that unfortunately we find ourselves in, sort of politically and otherwise, the chances of having a reasonable non-partisan discussion about almost anything is approaching zero at the moment. And I think that creates a vacuum in which technology companies, in the absence of legislation, can pretty much do what they want.
Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective, is still with us. Here we go with Gadget of the Week. And in a world where technology items can do 1,000 different things, Fevzi, you've chosen one thing that does one thing well.
Yeah, and that's, you've hit the nub of it there. Our smartphones are jacks and janes of all trades. Mm. And they do quite a reasonable job of most of it. So I found myself thinking, is there still a role for, a standalone sat-nav in your car or bike or wherever you choose to use it? And I've concluded that, yes, there is, and particularly if you get a particular sat-nav, because the better ones have clear benefits over using your smartphone. So the gadget of the week this week is the TomTom Go Discover 7. The 7 pertains to the fact that there is a 7-inch screen on it. There is a 6-inch version. I personally favour the 7 because it has a clear advantage over your smartphone in that it has a larger screen, it's easier to view, and you spend less time squinting at it, I would argue possibly
might
even
be safer.
Because it's much easier to see what's going on. And what they've done is they've put a lot of the technology that you find in smartphones into this device, so that the older sat-navs tended to have like clunky screens, not very touch sensitive, not really easy to pinch and zoom, and the things that we take for granted on smartphones and tablets have now come to standalone sat-navs as well. So there are a number of benefits. As I've said, the screen is larger. The speaker in it is better. The built-in speaker that gives that speaks to you is better. And why is it better? It's the same as with television sets. As television sets have got thinner and thinner, so you remember they were these big box things that used to go back a couple of feet, and or more, and now they're these things that are like a picture that can be hung on your wall. The problem with that is that the physics of loudspeakers hasn't really adapted to allow us to have a good solid sound coming out of something that's as thin as a smartphone, which is why, you know, we still pair smartphones with Bluetooth speakers to get, you know, good quality audio. But because this device is thicker, it's not thick, but because it's a good deal thicker than a slim smartphone, there is a depth in it to allow for a decent speaker, and that's important.
Right.
The other benefit is it saves the battery on your mobile phone in two ways. First of all, often when I drive and I'm using my phone as my sat-nav, it particularly, you know, obviously if I haven't plugged it in and I don't always want to, you know, go to the trouble of plugging it in, you know, my phone is more than half depleted by the time I get somewhere. And that's, you know, that's not a great thing. So having a separate sat-nav with its own built-in battery, which will go for 2 hours on its own built-in battery, and then you can always plug that in if you want to, means that it's leaving my phone fresher. Plus, it means my phone's internal battery is going through fewer recharge cycles, which means that the life of the battery in my smartphone is being lengthened by the fact that some of the work is being done by a secondary device. And it really does, you know, SatNav app does really, you know, deplete battery life quickly because you're using the wireless capability of the device. It's communicating in real time, and you're using a screen, and you're using quite a lot of processing power. So that's why it depletes quite quickly. So it helps the battery. Also, the internal maps. This has got the Go Discover 7, it's got world maps built into it, and they're bang up to date, and those take up a fair amount of space. So again, they're not being taken up on your phone. It comes complete with a car mount, which is actually designed for it. A lot of us mount our phones, or try and mount our phones. You know, yes. I know, because mine falls off the dashboard, you know, alarming frequency, because we're using aftermarket adapters that were not designed specifically for our phone. This device is designed to be mounted to a car. It has a good car mount with it that's made just for that. Then the other thing I thought about is the data. TomTom is sort of renowned for having the most accurate and most up-to-date data. In fact, sometimes they sell their data sets to producers of other sat-navs.
Oh, do they?
But yeah, they absolutely do, because it's not easy to create data.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
Apple have done their own and Google have done their own, but a lot of the others, you know, buy data in. But TomTom, because it tends to charge for its data on a subscription basis, has got up-to-date data. So you've got fuel saving, where you've got the up to the minute fuel pricing in your area, wherever you happen to be. It can direct you to the cheapest petrol station. The same for car parks. It tells you if a local car park is in the process of filling up or emptying out, so you've got a better chance of finding a parking space. So the same with speed cameras. Speed cameras are, you know, they appear in other products, but they tend to be a little bit out of date. You know, often new cameras don't appear, or cameras are no longer functioning are there and warning you, whereas on the TomTom they tend to be bang up to date as well. So taking all these things into account, I think the 7-inch model is £279. Not cheap, but
I was going to say that's the only thing, you know, when I first saw the amount, I thought, ouch, you know, getting on for £300 for a single function, is that going to be a hard sell?
I think it depends how much you drive and how important your time is. If you're saving money on fuel, if you're saving time on parking and traffic, I'll give you an example of one of the things that TomTom do. So when they're directing your vehicle along a particular route, and you can choose, by the way, the route that is going to be most efficient in time or the most efficient in fuel, because they're not necessarily the same route. Mm-hmm. But they do a very clever thing, because they have so many devices on the road and in people's vehicles. What they're able to do is, let's say there's two routes, they can actually send half of the traffic with TomToms in it down one route and half of it down the other route, stopping any of them being congested. If they said, okay, this is the best route, and sent everyone down the same route, it would very rapidly cease to be the best route.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's also this sort of traffic management that comes about because of the intelligence of their algorithm. So I think, you know, it's worth the money. If you think of what we pay to fill a tank and what even a small fuel saving can be in a year's time, I think it's something that can pay for itself. But also just the, as I said, there's a certain pleasure in having things that work well, and that are designed for a particular job, and it's not necessarily the cheapest option. But I actually think
I withdraw my objection. Then,
I think it's valid.
Talk me around.
It's not for everybody, but there are people for whom this, you know, will be useful. If your time is valuable, if you are a person who, you know, sometimes does turn up late for things and should not because, you know, you're all in a fluster and so forth, you know, just getting to a particular meeting on time can pay for it.
So that's the TomTom Go Discover 7, $279.99 or $249.99 for the slightly smaller 6-inch.
Yeah, look around, because sometimes you will find deals on these as well. 4 stars out of 5.
And we'll talk in 7 days. Thank you so much, Fevzi. Good to talk to you. Fevzi Turkalp is your gadget detective.